The number is 243-2877, but we have Chris Lowe from ESPN.com, Brian Hartman, and Richard Harb filling in for Tony Basilio today. Chris Lowe, welcome to the show. It's hot, and it's only going to get hotter.
Yeah, it's July and August type weather out there, Brian.
Chris, I got to ask you, the SEC media days, not the media days, but the SEC meetings in Destin, Florida have to be taking place soon. And what do you think it's going to feel like with the two new members coming into the league this year?
It's a, I tell you, I think it's just a start, Brian, of what's going to be another shift of the landscape in college football. I think we're going to see more. It's hard to predict exactly how much more, but I think you're going to see other teams moving, and I think the SEC will certainly be looking to see what's out there. I mean, I think Virginia Tech would be the big fish for the SEC if they could get them, especially if the ACC starts to crumble. But I think Missouri and Texas A&M both, you know, give the SEC exactly what they were looking for. They give them two new territories. In both cases, the SEC genuinely, you know, broadened its horizons. You know, you go into Texas, the SEC has long wanted a foothold in that state. And then you get Missouri, which, you know, you get to St. Louis, a little bit of the KC TV markets. You get a school that's pretty diverse as far as being, you know, pretty good in several different sports. Obviously, a really good basketball program and a football program that's probably better than it's given credit for. And you also get a school academically that's, you know, held in high regard. So I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where I think the conference has helped itself. Certainly will. It's benefited itself as far as leverage with the TV networks when they start to renegotiate these contracts. And I would say that the SEC, you know, by the time they're finished with CBS and ESPN, and I think you're also going to see the SEC create its own network, you're going to see this next TV contract for the conference just be off the planet. It's going to be just, you know, astronomical how much money the conference is going to be able to pull in because of their deal, the new deal that they're going to negotiate with the TV contract or TV networks.
Will they determine the scheduling as far as conference game goes? I know that the Tennessee-Kentucky basketball rivalry could be taken off the table as far as playing twice a year. You've also got the concern that Tennessee and Alabama in football might have a struggle to stay alive. You've got Georgia-Auburn there, too. Do you think there will be something determined there as to what they're going to do with the scheduling?
Well, this year was just a one-time deal. I'm talking about 2012. So, yeah, they're going to put together a format for the football scheduling going forward over the next 10 years. I don't see any – I would be shocked if the Alabama-Tennessee game in football was scrapped. I'd be shocked if the Auburn-Georgia game was scrapped as far as not playing every year. I think that's one of the priorities in the league. I think everybody's on board with that, to keep these traditional rivalries on an annual basis. So I don't think that's going to happen. I know Alabama and Tennessee both have been very outspoken, from presidents, you know, down to and chancellors down to football coaches, that rivalry needs to stay in place. I think it will, and I think it should. And I don't think that's something that's going to happen. Now, there will be, I think, some other shuffling, Brian, of every year opponents. For instance, I don't think Arkansas and South Carolina are going to play every year. I think Arkansas's opponent will probably end up being Missouri.
A lot of tears shed there
when it's all said and done. And so South Carolina is going to have to, you know, be paired up with somebody else. But, you know, there's not a lot of tradition in Arkansas and South Carolina, not even close to Auburn, Georgia, or Tennessee, Alabama.
We have Chris Lowe on from ESPN.com. Chris, shifting gears a little bit, there's been a situation on the University of Tennessee campus with Cam Clear, who has now been suspended indefinitely. And it's one of those things where it's almost impossible, you'd have to think, to keep Cam on the team for now, I would have to think.
Well, I think that's why they probably suspended him indefinitely, is to see just exactly what all's out there. I think it's been pretty well documented that this is not just I don't think this is just this one incident. There have been several thefts on campus over the last month or so. And that's not to say that Cam Clear was involved in every one of them. I don't think we know that. And I think that's probably, you know, what they're waiting to see. I don't think despite what's been said. I don't think this is just an utter surprise to anybody at Tennessee. Derek Dooley on down, that Cam Clear has been connected with thefts of laptops and or computer equipment on campus. I think there were maybe some other incidents that they felt like they had handled internally, and now this last one or this most recent one comes up involving a baseball player where he was caught with that computer. I think it's always important, and my 10 years of covering that beat for the Tennessean, you know, I always try to remind myself that, you know, when you read these police reports and you hear everything that's out there, that not everything, even on a police report, is always right. So I think it's important to sort of, let's wait and see how this shakes out, what exactly happened, how he came into contact with this computer. Clearly, though, he is he's on thin ice right now, Brian. And if he did steal from teammates, and or other athletes there in camp on campus, and this was a more than a one-time thing, then I don't see any way he survives if he is guilty.
Okay. Well, and then you have the trust issue.
Because you just can't have, I mean, nobody, yeah, whether you work in a radio station or you play on a football team or you're in, you know, a pie factory, you know, no one wants to be around anybody that's a thief, a convicted thief. And I think that's sort of their biggest dilemma right now on that football team is you got to have chemistry. You have guys who believe in each other, guys who fight for each other. And now here you have a guy accused and arrested of stealing equipment from another athlete.
Can you remember covering the team as long as you did, whether there was a kid that might have gotten into trouble that you just, he was the last kid you would expect to be caught up in whatever he was involved in? I think Cam Clear is sort of a quiet, comes from a good family,
mm-hmm,
not really the first person you'd expect to be involved in something like this.
Yeah, and I would echo that as well, Brian. Everybody I've talked to says the same thing about him, that he had never been in trouble, and just people are shocked that, you know, that he's in this position. You know, kids make mistakes. I guess Cam's, what, about 19 years old? Kids do things. And I know I certainly did things in college that I regret. Jason Respert was one that always comes to mind. You know, he was a guy that sort of had that cloud hanging over his head when he got to school because he was accused of some really bad things on a recruiting trip to Florida, you know, some sexual, sexual misconduct or inappropriate. I think what they ended up charging with was inappropriate touching of a female while he was on a visit at Florida. And he always maintained his innocence, always said that, you know what, that's not wasn't right, he didn't do it. I think what happened in the long run is, he got pleaded down and I think may have been expunged or dismissed. Bottom line is he got to Tennessee and was a model kid. I've not dealt with many better kids than Jason Respert in all the years he played at Tennessee. He was a good player. He was a good teammate. He was refreshing to deal with from my perspective in the media. He was honest. He was a yes sir, no sir type of guy and never got into an ounce of trouble when he was on campus at Tennessee. So he would sort of be one, but then it was a little different in that he sort of got in trouble
before he got
at Tennessee. But that's the example that I always use, that, you know, sometimes kids do things and make mistakes, but it's not necessarily a reflection of their character.
Speaking of changing gears again, it's Phil Steele Publications, I don't think it's come out, but I mean it's out there. The Tennessee, I think, is ranked 27th in his preseason poll, which I guess is, if they finish 27th in the country, I'd say Dooley is probably safe as far as keeping his job is concerned.
Well, maybe, but where is 27th in the conference? Is that 6th or 7th? I haven't seen all the rankings. I mean, you know, probably at least 5 teams are probably going to be ranked ahead of them. To me, Brian, everybody wants to know what it's going to take, and it's only natural for Derek to still be here in his 4th year. I just don't think there's a cookie-cutter answer for that. So much can happen. Football seasons evolve. I mean, you have injuries. You have other teams that you think are going to be really good and turn out to be not very good. And then you have vice versa that. I think more than anything, 2 things have to happen for Tennessee this year. The program has to show clear progress in that as they're getting into November and playing down the stretch there, people need to know from Dave Hart to Joe Blow, the average fan at Tennessee, that this program has made progress from September to November and is going forward and moving in a direction going up, you know, not losing to Kentucky, playing a receiver at quarterback, you know, not limping, you know, past Vanderbilt in overtime. I mean, this is it for a team that by November needs to be playing its best football. I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is they've got to win some games that count. You know, if they win seven games, but they don't beat Georgia, and they don't beat Florida, and they don't beat Alabama, and they don't beat South Carolina, well, who cares? I mean, you know, when you're at Tennessee, you're always going to be measured, and I remember Doug Dickey telling me this ad nauseum, you're always going to be measured by what you do against Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. And I think you can sort of add South Carolina to that mix now with what Spurrier's done in Columbia. So I think he needs to beat one of those teams. He needs to win a game of relevance, you know, a game that sort of shouts out to everybody else in college football in the SEC that says, you know what, third year, they've got some depth, they've got some experience. Some of these, all these freshmen who played because they had to play 2 years ago, now juniors, all right, Tennessee beat Georgia, they beat Florida, they beat Alabama, they beat South Carolina, we're on our way back. You know, they need to make that kind of statement. So I think those are the two things that need to happen, and whether that's eight wins, whether that's seven wins. I mean, for instance, what if they win seven games, and maybe they get upset by Missouri or whoever, North Carolina State, but they beat, say, Florida and Georgia. You know, I think if he wins eight games, then he's going to be fine. I think he should be fine. He deserves to get a fourth season. You know, even if in those eight games, you know, maybe you don't beat a Georgia or Florida, but you win eight, you get a chance to go to a decent bowl and have a shot to win nine. To me, that says that the program is on the right track and he deserves to get a fourth year. I've always thought he felt he deserved anybody, not just Derek Dooley, but anybody that sort of came into the situation that he did with all the attrition they had, you know, and some of the issues they had, deserved 4 years to get it right anyway. Now, he didn't help himself last year with the way he lost his football team at the end of the season, but now he's retooled his staff. They're older. Let's see what he does this year. I think the worst thing, Brian, if you're really a Tennessee fan, you really care about the program, the worst thing that could happen to Tennessee is for Dave Hart to have to hire another football coach 6 months from now, because that's just too much transition for any school. The best thing to happen for the program is for them to make progress, win eight football games, win a game or two that counts, get to a bowl game, and then Derek Dooley get a fourth season here.
I'd have to say that the chances to beat Florida are probably never going to be better than they are this year, though.
Well, you know what, we said that, you know, a lot of us said that back when Zook was there, you know, and Tennessee did beat him. I guess Fulmer beat him in 03, in 04, lost to him in 02. Last year, I felt like Tennessee had a decent chance to win. Even down there, that was an unproven Florida team. Muschamp was in his first year. But getting him in Knoxville is always nice for Tennessee. I would agree that that's a game that if you're really going to make progress and you're really going to make a move and make some noise in the East, you know, Tennessee probably needs to win that one. But I tell you what, the game to me that sticks out even more is that opener against NC State, because that sets the tone for the entire season. You lose that game, you know, and then 2 weeks later, you know, you got a do or die game against Florida, because you start out 1-2, it's Armageddon around here, and you've been around here long enough to know that. So I think that NC State game is as pivotal a game as any on their schedule. I continue to say the two games that really stick out for me, if Tennessee's definitely going to be an 8-win team or make a run at 8 wins, are that NC State game to start the season and that Missouri game at home later in the year. I think there are two games Tennessee has to win if they're going to make a run at 8 wins this year.
Now, if, say, Tennessee wins that North Carolina State game and maybe the Florida game, does that mean the coach at NC State, Tom O'Brien, and maybe Will Muschamp, is the heat going to be turned up that much more on them?
Well, I mean, I don't know so much about O'Brien. I can tell you this for Muschamp. You know, this is his second year. They were 7-6 last year. They did not beat anybody that finished the season with a winning record. You know, they will not have a lot of patience at Florida. Now, I'm not predicting they're going to fire him after 2 years, But if he's sitting there at 7-5, 6-6 again this year, then the third year he absolutely has to get to the SEC championship game, or he's not going to see a fourth year. So yes, I mean I think this is a year that Florida needs to be an 8-9 win team. And I think they need to be competing for the SEC's title in November. They weren't a factor last year in November. They need to be sort of knocking on that door. And, you know, the East has been wide open. And maybe this is that year that a Tennessee or Florida sneaks up and wins. I don't think so, because Georgia's schedule is so easy. They don't play Arkansas. They don't play Alabama. They don't play LSU. They get South Carolina later in the season. If Georgia doesn't win 10 games this year, then they're never going to win 10 again, because that schedule is as conducive as I've seen for a 10-win season. So I think Georgia wins. I'm not sure that Georgia is heads and shoulders above everybody in the East. I think they're pretty good. I like what they've done on defense. I think Todd Grant and their defensive coordinator has done a heck of a job. But I think because of their schedule, which is a huge advantage for them, I like them to win the East.
How do you see Missouri fitting into the East, and maybe some more Texas A&M in the West?
Well, you know, it's going to be a couple of years before we really have a good read on either one of those teams. You know, Texas A&M comes in with a brand-new coach, new system on offense. They're going from a 3-4 to 4-3 on defense. They've got some guys on defense who can get to the passer. I wonder about them being strong enough up the middle to really stop some of the power running games they're going to see in the SEC. Going to be a brand new quarterback playing for him. Whoever it is, it's probably Jamil Showers. I think he threw 5 passes last year, Brian. I think they struggle this year to be a bowl team. I think of the two, if you said which of this first season of the two who has the best chance to get to a bowl against Missouri, I mean, the big thing is they play in the East and A&M plays in the West. I mean, in the West, you've got 3 teams that are top 10 teams. And plus, Missouri's got that, you know, established quarterback who's just a dynamic run pass threat if he's healthy. And James Franklin, you know, had shoulder surgery and missed most of the spring. So that's the key for them, is getting him back. And they've got some veterans on that offensive line. I think Missouri probably is of the two is your best bet to have a breakthrough type first season and win maybe 7-8 games or more and go to a bowl game of those two.
Does Vanderbilt take a step forward, or do they just kind of go back to being Vanderbilt?
Well, you know, I like what James Franklin's done. I think he's exactly what that program needed. You know, he's a lot like Bruce Pearl. Unless he's coaching your team, nobody really likes him. You know, Pearl was the same way when he was at Tennessee. Everybody thought he was brash and just was one of those guys that was a little over the top. That's the same way with Franklin. But they needed, Vanderbilt's football team needed an edge. They needed somebody to come in there and shake it up and sort of say, you know what, I don't care what Vanderbilt's history is. I don't care how many times we've only won 2 or 3 games in the season. You know, that version of Vanderbilt's gone. I mean, it's not coming back. I think his kids have sort of taken on his personality and have played like that on the field. Can they get back to 6 wins or better and make it to a bowl game? Yeah, they can, but they better win all their non-conference games, okay, which they got to play at Northwestern, they got to play at Wake Forest. You know, those are 2 games that they really need to win on the road, you know, and then they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to find, you know, 2 or 3 SEC wins somewhere. You know, they had a nice year last year, but they still didn't beat anybody that finished the season with a winning record. So I think they've got to change that. But I like what James Franklin's building there. He's recruiting a better caliber athlete. He's getting involved with some guys that Vanderbilt traditionally has not been able to get involved with on the recruiting front. Those are all good signs. And I tell you what, Brian, they played with an edge last year. Even when they lost, you know, Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, they were right there in that game with 4, 5, 6 minutes to play in position to win. And that's you know, you keep sort of swimming in those waters, sooner or later, you know, you're going to win the race.
Arkansas has to replace their coach in sort of what was a tragic situation there. Not tragic, but a very unfortunate. A lot of bad luck involved. Do you see them taking much of a dip, or is their talent still good enough to where they'll just be able to put it on autopilot?
No, I don't think you never put it on autopilot in the SEC. It's such a fine line, the margin is so thin between being a 7 or 8 win team and a 10 win team, or gosh, a 6 win team and a 9 or 10 win team. It, you know, it doesn't take much, and you know, if you lose a little bit of that edge, you lose some chemistry. You know, there was a part of, I think Petrino, for all of his faults, you know, his team, he was able to get his team to play with a real sense of purpose, and they played, you know, they played really tough, hard-nosed football. You know, can John L. Smith get his team to play like that? I don't know. They're going to be really good throwing the football. I think Tyler Wilson's outstanding, Kobe Hamilton, Chris Gregg, he's got some big-time guys to throw to. You know, is Nile Davis 100%? He's had 3 fractured ankles in his career, one in high school. Can he come back and be what he was in 2010? If he is, well, they're going to be a load on offense for anybody. Defensively, it goes back to what, you know, we've said the last few years. Can they stop anybody when they need to? And you go back to last year, you go back to 2 years ago when they really needed to stop people. I think of that Alabama game in Fayetteville 2 years ago. They couldn't do it. Alabama just lined up and ran the football down their throats. So Paul Haynes is there as the defensive coordinator. He comes over from Ohio State, a little bit of a new system. They lost some good players, and Jake Beckett, Jerry Franklin, Tremaine Thomas there at safety. Can they be a championship-caliber defense and give their offense a little bit of a break? Brian, I don't think you can win a championship in this league by trying to win every game 41-35, 44-38, 38-31. It's just too hard week in, week out. The grind is too difficult. The defenses are too good to do that. Sooner or later, somewhere along the way, you got to lean on your defense. Your defense or your special teams has to win one. We've seen that with Alabama. You know, Alabama-Tennessee 2 years ago, when Alabama sort of guts that one out, Cody blocks that field goal at the end of the game. You got to win one or two of those type games. And I don't know that Arkansas defensively will be good enough to do that and get to the SEC championship game.
So I guess when it's all said and done, it's Alabama-LSU. One of those two win the SEC.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think until proven differently, yes. I mean, LSU has 3 guys on their defensive line this year, Montgomery, Mingo, and Benny Logan, that have an excellent chance to be first-round picks. 3, not on their defense, on their defensive line, okay? And then they got a guy in the secondary, or 2 in the secondary. One was a Heisman finalist last year, Matthew, and another, Eric Reed, who also might be a first- or second-round draft choice. They might be better. I know this sounds crazy. They might be better on defense this year than they were last year. They are just loaded to the gills. And I also like what Zach Mettenberger gives them on offense. I think they're much more balanced. And I don't think defenses will be able to play them the way they did last year, because I think as you got into the middle of the season, it was pretty obvious that Jefferson could not beat you throwing the football.
Chris Lowe, we appreciate your time. Have a safe Memorial Day weekend, and cool, by the way, too.
Okay. All right, Brian, you guys take care. Have a good day.
That's Chris Lowe, ESPN.com.